You know, I thought that was keep them separated. So did you, didn't you?
It sounds a little like it.
We're old.
Yeah, it does sound like it.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And we have repeat guests. It doesn't happen very often, but we're excited when it does. There's a series on WTTW called In Common, and the host of that In Common is Mike Leonard, and the executive producer of Leonard Films, Mary Kay Wall, is with us. Welcome back, you guys.
Thank you, Wendy. Hello.
Nice to see you guys.
Last time you were up, we were talking about, was this right when In Common started?
When you started doing this? Yeah. And this came about because, like a lot of people, I've been frustrated with problems in society, and you go, "What? Why is this happening?" And so I started thinking about people who just do something about what is happening. And I knew this man at this school, Providence St. Mel, who took it over in the late 70s. It was a crumbling building and in a really tough part of town. And for the last 40 years, 100% of the students from high school get accepted into college in a real simple way. So he made that better himself. And now, of course, it's got great teachers and all the rest. It's not all him, but he just fixed it. And he keeps saying it's simple. It's just high expectations, order and discipline, and keep raising the bar.
So why isn't this happening at other schools?
That's the question. He thought it would be a model, and it didn't become a model. I mean, certainly there are schools out there that do well, but not enough of them. And there's certainly not enough in poor neighborhoods. So it's amazing. It's this building, when he moved in, was falling apart. I did a story on the Today Show in 1982 on him, and Ronald Reagan saw the story, and he came to the school. And when he came to the school, so did a lot of heavy hitters, and they started funding.
All of a sudden, it got attention.
It got attention. Now, the building is a lot better, but they always struggle with the poverty and getting kids. It's a private school, so they charge tuition.
Yeah.
And part of that is philosophical. You know, you have a stake in the game here. But almost all the kids are on scholarships, you know, some kind of financial aid for that private tuition. But 100% go, you know, go to college, and they all get college scholarships.
So it's amazing.
It's an amazing thing. And you go into the hallways, it's perfectly quiet. And I think it's in a really rough part of West Garfield Park, but it's probably the safest block in the city.
Yeah.
Nothing happens.
Explain this, because this is the part I can't figure out, and I'm trying my best to. The model is there. You see how it can work, and then we're trying to figure out why it hasn't been emulated in other places. Is there a reason that I'm missing? Why isn't it?
There is no reason that I can think of it. I think you have to have strong leadership. He's very strong and very tough, and he stepped back from his duties as a principal, and Jeanette Butala does that now, but they follow his model, and he's very strict. I mean, there is order. There is their appearance has to be a certain way, and it's difficult for, you know, there are kids on the street who have to dress a certain way to survive on the street. And you go in here, and he wants you to be neat and clean and quiet.
Yeah,
and learn.
Yeah,
and I don't think a lot of people are as vigilant and, you know, and cracking the whip that way all the time.
Do you think all schools need to be like this, though? Do you think that all kids would benefit from an atmosphere like this?
I think all kids would benefit from the order and the quiet and the discipline, no fights, things like that. I was a student who was learning disabled, and I wouldn't, I mean, they could push me, but they'd have to help me because I can't, even to this day, I can't read very well. So
you learn differently than other people.
I learned differently, yeah. This is a hard-charging school academically. I'm sure they do have help for kids like me and all that. I didn't get into that part of the story, but I think order and discipline always in a family too. I mean, respect, right? I mean, we have fun in our house and we're goofy and but we don't trash talk. I mean, I didn't allow the kids to do that because it's respect and I think
and everyone has a role.
Everybody has that and. So they can be angry, they can be this and that, but I think it does work. Well, it certainly has worked. And it's a frustration for Paul Adams, the man we're talking about, because he thought it would be better. He thought society would be better. He thought the violence would end, the poverty, but, you know, 50, 40 years after he started. Well, yeah, I've been filming in the neighborhood. Mary Kay, I don't want to let you talk too, but filming in the neighborhood, and 25 years ago, I wasn't that worried. Because people wouldn't shoot a cameraman or a cop, it seemed, back then. But now it's more dangerous. All the gangs have been fractured. And so filming, and I film a lot of my own stuff, and, you know, you get out of the car and you walk around, and you don't know. I mean, yeah. Someone's behind you, and of course. You can't see. So,
Mary Kay, I think last time that you guys were here, we were trying to figure out a way to best simplify what this documentary series does. And I think it was you who said it was something along the lines of ordinary people doing extraordinary things, right? Does that sound familiar?
Yes, it is. Yeah? And it's kind of a response to that whole concept of, in this atmosphere now that is so acrimonious in society, are you going to be so affected by that that you're paralyzed? Yeah. Or, you know, can you, in your own little way, affect some change? And so we're putting our camera and our spotlight on those efforts. And some might think, well, that's a drop in the bucket, and it's a pretty big, you know, bucket. But these things taken together really do make a difference. In Providence St. Mel's case, Paul didn't have a dime, in his words, to keep this school alive. But, you know, he took a leap of faith, and people came together.
Yeah.
And Mike being very instrumental in that back in 1982, and that's a great part of the story.
Oh, Ronald. Yeah. And Paul, just a little background, he came from Montgomery, Alabama. He marched with King from Selma to Montgomery. He was blackballed from teaching in Alabama because he was a marcher. He came to Chicago. He worked as a manager in a fast food thing. Heard about there's a, you know, guidance counselor job open. He wanted to get into education.
Yeah.
Took that job and then became the principal. And that when the Archdiocese closed the school, he refused to go. They closed it down and said, we're not doing it anymore. And he said, but these kids are going to college, and I've always promised them if you work hard, things will pay off. So he stayed. Yeah. And he was the
janitor. He stuck to his word.
He was the bus driver. He still cuts the lawn. He's almost 78 years old now. And, you know, it's wearying. I mean, a guy gives his life. He doesn't have children of his own. And yet the country and the world are filled with doctors and lawyers and business people and teachers that might never have done that.
There's parallels to the Father Flager story here in Chicago. You see those parallels too, don't you?
Yeah. And he's a... He's not known. You know, there's a giant amongst us out there. And all of his teachers are dedicated. They stay years and, you know, over, I think the average is like 14 years. And they're so dedicated, and they're all for the kids. And the kids prosper. And of course, their lives are changed, and their children's lives are changed. And everything has changed. Education is the way out of poverty.
Yeah.
I always wonder what attributes or what special insights that type of person has to give up their life for a goal and a movement that they want to achieve. It's amazing.
It's amazing. He said, Paul, when he was 14, Emmett Till was killed, and it affected him, he said, because he was 14 at the time. He said, that could happen to any of us. His mom would send him up to buy thread and dress patterns in town when he was a little boy, give him some money. And I said, why were they seamstresses? He said, no, back then the black women were not allowed to try dresses on in stores, so they made their own. And so that stuff just filtered into him. And King, Martin Luther King, moved into his neighborhood. Ralph Abernathy was a block away. So he was there when the bus boycott happened, and he saw it change. He saw people get seats in buses. And he goes, I want to have a life like that, and teaching was the way to do it for him.
Mike, when I hear stories like that, my brain wants to think that was a million years ago, but it was in our lifetime.
In our lifetime, I know. And it's cloaked now, but it was wide open. And, you know, going through, Mary Kay, you talk about the footage you've been going through on this, the historical stuff.
I mean, it's been amazing. It's really shocking because I was 10 years old when this was going on, and I thought I was aware, but it was so much worse. And one of the questions we ask when we interview is, you know, didn't you think things would be better 50 years ago?
Some cases they have.
Yes, certainly there have been great inroads, but there are many misconceptions that we still have, you know, about one another. And that's been one of the great lessons of this film. We traveled with a bus of kids who are not from Providence St. Mel, but it's an effort to help other kids who don't have the advantage of a Providence St. Mel education.
And it started by a Providence St. Mel grad.
Yes, yeah. and his father. And, you know, some of the kids look like what we'd say are hoods, and they have an attitude of, you know, coolness and defensiveness, and you think they're tough, but deep down, they want the same things we want, and they were gentle, loving people, and they're aspiring to something higher. And so, you know, Providence St. Mel then goes out into the city, these graduates, and they help other people who haven't had the advantages that, that they have had.
It's interesting to see, you know, the gangster look, and you kind of have to do that on the street to survive.
Right.
Which is no eye contact, you know.
Right, like I know the suburban white girl, like I even know.
Yeah. and then that's survival, but then in the world it doesn't work. You can't go to a job and slouch in your interview and slouch and not make eye contact and go, mm-hmm, yeah, right.
No one's going to hire you.
No one's going to hire you, but that might get you killed if you... on the street if you don't act like that. So it's a tough thing. But this is, as I said to Mary Kay coming in, this is a story that is a reassuring story, and it's also a warning.
Yeah.
Because you see, well, look at, this is one school that's doing this job, and that is really reassuring. But why aren't there more? And it can only do so much.
Right, because the model, the work's been done. The model is there. Why can't it be followed?
Paul just shakes his head and I don't know, and everybody keeps saying it's simple. It is simple. Just have every kid who goes to that school from the first, you know, kindergarten on, you are going to college. So expectations, here's the work you have to do,
and
here's the things you can't do. You can't disrupt anybody else because they're on that road to success.
And the outside reputation of the discipline is, you know, that it's something extraordinary and severe. It isn't. It's just ordinary respect for one another, for yourself, for your teachers, and, you know, the ethic of hard work and rigorous academics. Those are the things that you're going to need in life, whether you know it or not. So you're either going to be prepared for that life and have a life that is fulfilling, or, you know, you're not going to learn those lessons and you're going to be less than who you could be, or in that neighborhood get in, you know, trouble.
That's old school. You respect your teachers. You respect one another. I mean, that's
basic rules of life. It's not draconian.
Mary Kay Wall and Mike Leonard, their documentary premieres on Thursday on WTTW. That's May the 10th. It's Up to Us. We'll continue this discussion next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Mary Kay Wall and Mike Leonard have put together a great documentary. It's Up to Us. It's part of the In Common series over on WTTW. This particular episode airs on Thursday night at 9 o'clock on Channel 11 on WTTW. Guys, we don't have a lot of time, but what did you learn during the making of this?
It is up to us. There's one of the fellows who went to Providence St. Mel and became a reporter for the New York Times, Washington Post. He's a columnist at the Sun-Times, John Fountain. And he said, the cavalry is not coming.
Yeah.
We can't wait for it. We have to save ourselves. And we talked about respect before. It just starts with that. Just respect yourself. Respect the person in front of you. And that's what they've done. And it's simple. And it's old school, like what you said, Wendy. It is in it, but it works.
It did work. What happened?
Respect went away. I used to be a hockey player, and I remember you wouldn't trash talk. It was a code. And I think there are codes that work in society. I don't know what happens. I think, you know, all kinds of cultural things, whether it's rock and roll when we were kids and all of a sudden you dress like a hood or whatever it is, movies, it's entertainment. But in the real world, if you just look at somebody in the eye and you do the right thing.
Yeah.
And you know, you respect people.
The golden rule. Isn't that all it is?
Yeah.
But do you think, I know a lot of people blame Donald Trump for a lot of things. There is a political climate in the country right now that's a little strange. Is this playing into it a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, we did a project with Latinos in the summer, and a lot of them, you know, they felt unwanted.
Yeah.
And right now, that's part of the situation. And one of the church... Reverend Hatch, Marshall Hatch, we're talking about, is there a time limit to this patience,
mm-hmm.
you know, when before that? And mm-hmm. and that time limit seems to be running out because of that discourse of hate or blame. And it doesn't just come from politicians. It comes from people now. It's open. It's out there. And I think that's part of social media where people got, you know, you get brave when you're not face-to-face.
Right.
And that, I think that fuels other people to say things face to face.
Yeah,
Bill, you mentioned that, you know, acrimonious political climate. It is there, but there's an urgency to now. You know, there, even though politics is discouraging, in individual communities and in individual lives, kids are growing up, and I think that was Paul's, you know, modus operandi from the beginning. We don't have time to wait for these kids. They can't be 18 when we figure this out, or it's too late. So
that's true.
Yeah.
Reverend Ackery was saying one of the saying that it was like Nazareth. They said Jesus came from this place and nothing good comes out of Nazareth. And that's what people think about the West Side. Nothing good comes out of the West Side. Yeah. Ton of good people there. A lot of good people. Some are just trapped and can't
absolutely
get out. And these kids are representatives of that neighborhood, and they're coming out, and they're doing their part to change the world.
We need to watch this. It's up to us. It's part of Mike's In Common series that you can see on WTTW. And when does it air?
That'll be Thursday night, May the 10th, this upcoming Thursday at 9 p.m. right there on Channel 11. Great to see both of you. Thank
great.
You very
we have
much
great,
for being
great
here.
Show. Thank you.
Thank Mike.
You.
It's Mike Leonard and Mary Kay Wall. We'll
come back sooner next
please.
Time, will you?
Yeah, please do. A quick break, some news, and then we'll find out what Steve has coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch.